And if it's a solid red light, it's on, correct? All right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's all I have.
This is the policy of each and every United Lodge of Theosophists, wherever in the world it is situated. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinions. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purpose and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Here in Philadelphia, to honor the commitment of this policy, we have two weekly meetings. On Wednesdays, we open at 5:15 for a reference library that runs until 7:15. And always there is someone available to help you locate materials. It is a reference library, not a lending library. Then at 7:15, no, at 7:30, we have a study class. We are studying William Q. Judge's Ocean of Theosophy, and we're about to begin Chapter 8 on Reincarnation. There's always plenty of time for questions and discussion. And on Sundays, obviously, we meet from 11 to 12. The doors open at 10:30. The overall subject for January, the month of January, is the path of spiritual evolution. And our topic for next Sunday, January 13th, is realizing spiritual identity and unity. All of the meetings, all of the work, all of the effort here at this lodge or any lodge is on the basis of volunteerism. Money, it takes money to keep the building open, of course, but it's a voluntary donation. There's no passing of the hat, no fees for any of the work that is done here. And besides that, there is the donation of time and service of individuals, and all is much appreciated. Now, this morning, the reading is from the Voice of the Silence on the subject of personal development and individual perfectibility. From the Voice, to live to benefit mankind is the first step. To practice the six glorious virtues is the second. To don Nirmanakaya's humble robe is to forgo eternal bliss for self, to help on man's salvation. To reach Nirvana's bliss, but to renounce it, is the supreme, the final step, the highest on renunciation's path. Know, O disciple, this is the secret path, selected by the Buddhas of perfection, who sacrificed the self to weaker selves. Thou canst create this day thy chances for thy morrow. In the great journey, causes sown each hour bear each its harvest of effects, for rigid justice rules the world. With mighty sweep of never-erring action, it brings to mortals lives of weal or woe, the karmic progeny of all our former thoughts and deeds. Take then as much as merit hath in store for thee, O thou of patient heart. Again, the topic for this morning is personal development and individual perfectibility. I always get confused.
Our topic, personal development and individual perfectibility. We could consider them two separate subjects. However, they are the same subject, just a longer conversation. We are told in the philosophy that desire first arose in it. And we have come to understand that desire is what rules the universe in which we live. This world is surrounded by the flames of passion and desire. We are immersed in it. That being the case, how do we surmount this obstacle on one hand, but a blessing on the other? For within that desire comes our motivation, comes our desire to know ourselves, is our desire to reunite with that universal brotherhood, which we are, in fact, a part of. We are, in fact, united all together. So, how do we come to understand our place in this world in which we find ourselves? We see around us but chaos. Well, we have been shaping that chaos since we entered this plane of reality. Each one of us has shaped it, have molded it into what we call our life, or what we call our existence. For most of us, we've been taking, we would say, a ride or a journey. We are looking at this life that we are living. We are giving it attention. We are looking at it. And we come to see that we are more or less being drawn along by the desires and wishes and the lust and the separateness of the world in which we live. It is powerful. However, we have been given an instrument, a tool, to use to shape and to carve out our place in this chaos. It becomes a duty because we are all united as one being. So there's this overwhelming urge to move forward, to realize our oneness. So how do we do this? Well, we do it, we've been doing it up to this point. We haven't changed. We just aren't aware of the powers that we have. It's quite obvious to us that if you pay attention to something long enough, or you repeat it many times, you sort of become proficient at it. Whether it's painting, whether it's riding a bicycle, whether it's dancing, whether it's singing, whether it's being concentrated on something for more than a second. That through attention to details and to life, we become proficient in life. Those who do not heed what they see find their lives full of folly. Life is teaching us that the obstacles that are presented before us can be overcome. We can create our own powers. We can create our own life. In fact, we do create our own life. It's just that we do not have a very high ideal or idea of what and who we are. This attention that we have, we use it on the physical plane all the time. That's how we maneuver in it. That's how we find our way through it. That's where we find some kind of solace and some kind of center. But that's only after we have paid attention on that mental plane. And we see that through mental discipline, we can come to understand many things. Through concentration and concentrated attention, one becomes focused. And through being focused, one can learn and understand. But it's only through this focus or this attention that we can change, we can learn. Because this attention is really nothing more than our true self. It is watching, ever watching. So, are we going to be passively attentive? Which is very easy to find ourselves, because you know, we're watching something, we're reading something, we're listening, but we're not engaged in the true sense. It's a vicarious engagement. Our concentration is on knowing. And through that knowing, one gains power and control. So You have your body, you have your mind. But what about your moral nature? Well, this is this turning within. This is this knowing of yourself, knowing yourself. When one becomes interested in universal brotherhood and becomes interested in the fact that karma rules the universe and reincarnation is simply a process by which we keep on coming back to learn and to experience who and what we truly are. We are spiritual beings. We are not these bodies. We are on a journey of awakening. By placing our attention on the physical plane, we gain knowledge of the physical plane. To put our attention on the mental plane, we're gaining knowledge of those mental processes or that mental life. And we place attention on our moral nature, we become aware of our oneness, that we're all the same in essence. And that this attention which we are able to draw, we do not know where it comes from because it is a spiritual power. It is not the mind working, nothing to do with the mind. It's direct perception. But our perception is clouded by the ideas that we hold. A great esoteric truth. And it's not talked about. That our will, through training, we can overcome this lower nature. And we can begin to experience our true spiritual nature. We are spiritual beings, living in a physical body. And through this process, we are like a bolt of light passing through darkness or through matter. That light, which we are, passes from the very minutest invisible forms of matter up until the human form. And all matter is moving in that direction. All life wants to enter the human kingdom. It's a natural evolutionary process. And the will is used on our part to perfect ourselves. You know, in Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms, it talks briefly about will, because nowhere else will you find this in the philosophy. It is truly esoteric, because the will is spirit in action. And by us concentrating on it, or using it in a concerted manner, we create. We create the world in which we live. We create our own world by what we focus our attention on. That is what we propagate. What distracts us, what takes us off our journey or our task. We have a task. We have a journey. Sure, it's difficult. But we're all on it. And we're all struggling with it. It is not easy. That's why this room has but a few of us. Because to take responsibility for your life, you must take responsibility for your will. What does that mean? Well, your desires. Because behind that will, desire is what runs our life. So we come to these rooms to talk about lofty ideas, things that are harmonizing and bring us together. This is where we must plant our seeds for the evolution of a different world. It's going to be different, but we have the power to make it whatever it will become. Now, we live in a world now that we see chaos. Well, we're responsible for that chaos. We need to carve out that piece of this world and influence it and shape it and mold it through our desires and our will and our compassion into that world in which we want to live. We have to make it. So, the path to perfectibility is the path that you're on now. Some, we don't know it because we're struggling. We can't get our head out of the matter of emotions and feelings and rise above it and look at it dispassionately. That we're not all these feelings. We're not all these changes that we see. We are that one constant, unchanging aspect of this world in which we live. And that we have to find in ourselves. And that has to become our home base. And that's the viewpoint which we need to develop on which to see the world. That there's no outside God. God lies within. Well, how can he lie within? Because every speck of light is that God, is that absolute principle. Because it is not a being, but beingness itself. And it pervades the universe. That's why universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. There is nothing that is not spirit. Nothing. It's sometimes called the spirit matter principle because it is dual when it manifests. There is that which is and will always be. It comes forth as a great breath, and then it withdraws itself. That's the analogy or the metaphor we are asked to envision in our mind. Just as we breathe in and out, so does the universe, but from within outward. So what we garner within as the truth becomes our very being because we are ever coming out. So that when we concentrate and when we pay attention to our spiritual being, our soul life, we make it more of a reality. That's why we're asked to stop. Become present to yourself so that you can observe all the change around you. And The world may be imperfect, but this moment you change yourself, you have changed the world. We are that powerful. We change ourselves, our attitudes, our understanding of who and what we are. That we are godlike beings. Even now, in these disgusting states of matter we find ourselves in, we have such cruelty and things around us. But because that does exist, that is the evidence that we are great beings. These ideas have to permeate our world. Not, we think, how do we change the world? Well, it's the ideas. You're being dared to talk about these ideas in some way, shape, or form. But put them into life, put them into reality, make them alive. And that's the journey, because we do not live for ourselves, we live for others. We do not know all of this on our own, but we know this through the help of others. We are always aided, and these ideas will set us free. Because we are trapped in the prison of our own ideas and of our material world. We are not that. We are never ending. We will go on living and living in one form or another, in one kind of body or another. We do not die. We are eternal. Boundless and immutable in our essence. And the process by which we do this is karma and reincarnation, because the journey is of the soul. Through our deeds, we come again and again. What we have concentrated on, what we have put our attention on, draws us back and back and back. Are we in love with life? Are we in love? Most of us, we are. But that's good. But it has to be the life of not a personal self, but of that impersonal self, where we have the opportunity to be self-realized. And it's an individual journey. These ideas that are presented are just like a kick in the shins. Hey, this is here, this is here. I know it hurts to think about it, because you don't want to change your thinking patterns, because we've become very comfortable with the way things are. I may be in a lot of pain, but I understand that. No, the pain is just, hey, this, you still live in this world of duality. So how do you make manifest these noble ideas? Well, we are told by living the life. What does that mean? Do what seems best unto you. Do it. Just do it. Do it. Don't be afraid or don't be shy to love your fellow man, because it's hidden. People are afraid to be human. They know how to be animal-like, because everyone sort of relates to that. But our goal is to be human. And we do that through a concentrated attention on the truths that we come here to realize. There are many ideas, but if we give them our concentrated attention, they will become living, because these are living ideas. If they aren't put to use, they become dead. And we see what's happened to all the religions in the world. They're dying because they do not have that living truth espoused. They have the living truth, but they do not share it. Theosophy is sharing it with everyone. And that is why it was presented in the 1800s to reawaken in the race these ideas. We could talk and talk and talk. But we're really more interested in some of the ideas that you may have. Because by questioning what you think, you open up the door to more questions. We all don't have the answer. We think we have the answer. That's how we operate from day to day. Stop. You talk. Yes.
If as spiritual or soul beings we have been reincarnating for many lives, there's a lot of perfectibility that's already going on. There's a lot of knowledge and wisdom we must have in our nature. And yet the personality we have in any one life certainly doesn't reflect that. Is the purpose of personal development to make ourselves better persons or better vehicles to regain and express all that wisdom that we've accumulated through many lives?
Yes, to become better persons in one sense, but to make yourself a better vehicle. But by doing that, you become a better person. You know, when we say become a better person, well, how do we make this vehicle more porous to the dictates of the soul? We are told that. Our life will blossom if we make ourselves more porous to the dictates of the soul. Well, do you know your soul? Do you know where the soul is? Do you know how you can come and be in communication with it? Do you have a little voice that talks to you every once in a while? That guides us? Sometimes we don't listen to it. Most of the time we don't listen to it. But we are soul beings. And we are in control of the world in which we live. You wouldn't guess it, but we do. We've done this through passive attention. It happens. It's the great cycle of life. It's nothing is good or bad, it just is. And when we get over the fact of it's good or bad, we can look at it dispassionately, that we're not personally involved, even though we are personally involved. But it's that personal self that gains the upper hand in our life. Because how did we get here? That personal self got us here. He's my buddy. He knows what I like. He knows what I like to do. You know, I mean, we have a lot of fun together. But that's the problem. He doesn't have any discipline. You know, I know our mothers always said that. But we have to say it to ourselves. We have to look at this personality, this buddy we have, this friend that has come to our aid many times. But when we look back, was it really my personality that came forward? Or was there something much more than that? And we come to realize that our buddy is only there for the good times. And when they become very bad, often we say, why? Why me? Why me? That's what we wish for. That's the seeds that we planted. That's the flower that we see. Everything that comes to us is the result of our own thought, word, and deed. That is how we create. We are the creators of the universe. And our will is the driving spiritual force. But behind will stands desire. You have to want, you have to desire this higher life. And who doesn't say to themselves, there's so much to do. There's so many things to see. There's so many places to go. The world is filled with fantasy and, oh, it's beautiful, the ocean, you know. We always, wherever we go, we always take it with us. We're always there. And we're not really, we just maybe changing the atmosphere so that we can readjust. But we can't get away from anything. We've made a commitment to each other, whether you know it or not. We're going to be friends for a long time. Only through association, because assumptions are being made that everyone here has a love for humanity.
You speak about being porous to our soul so that we can hear.
You have to.
Yeah, I said you speak about being porous to the soul so that we can understand the true path and guidance from the higher soul knowledge, but yet each one of us is born pretty much with blinders on without even knowing that there is a soul. So how do you reconcile living an entire life being blindfolded to the fact that there is a soul and that we need to relinquish, you know, our selfish desires for that of the soul, and yet at the same time we speak about our will, okay, which is mostly driven by selfish desires, and yet we still have a desire to become greater and better human beings, say, to learn theosophy. So how do you reconcile desires and being porous to the soul when we're born blinded to all of that?
Assumptions. We're not born blinded. None of us are born with blindfolds on. You know, reality hits us squarely in the face from that moment of exiting the womb. Just as a new idea exits our mind. Okay? It is open to all that's there. The only thing that's lacking is discrimination. But as this fetus gets older, it becomes more and more discriminatory. It takes on new task. You know, we think learning a new language is a real feat, but can you consider the idea of walking? Learning to walk, or something that you've never experienced in this plane, but somehow you do. And somehow we know that we've done this before somewhere, but, you know, because it's a natural impulse. There is that natural impulse in the universe. And that's why we are said, speak these ideas. Do not hide them under a bushel. Speak them. That's how you can affect others' lives. That's how you can light their candle. Maybe you just a conversation and you talk about reincarnation in the sense that you understand it. You know, it makes sense. You don't have to try to prove anything. You just be honest. Be honest. One of the biggest things that people we see in the world in which we live is fear. People are afraid because it's promoted. It's helpful. You know, it motivates. You know, but when one is fearful, one is sort of closed. Is not open. So, we have to decide how we want to live our life. It has to be an actual decision. You know, it's said that in the next great round, thousands, maybe millions of years forward, that humanity will have evolved onto higher planes, and we will, not humanity, us, but we will be presented with a choice of which way we wish to go. The path of unity and oneness, or the path of individual selfishness and into the abyss of darkness. I mean, there is that choice, but the choice is also now, because you heard it. You cannot deny it. You are a spiritual being. You do reincarnate. Karma is a fact in nature. We have been together before, and we'll be together again, because these ideas are so powerful.
Well, we may not be born blind in the sense that even at birth there is the power to perceive and know and witness the reality described, but you would have to admit that we are born wearing different colored glasses or lens by which we view those experiences. And some of them we pick up from the impressions of those around us, parents, teachers. But some we bring to our those things inherently, almost as our character. Every different child in the family has a different character or a way in which they view the world. Well, doesn't that reconcile the issue? It's the karma or the effect of previous thoughts, words, and deeds?
Yes. We all are a different character, each one of us, because our experiences are different. Now, and we're not just the sum total of this life. We're the accumulation of all the lives that we've lived. It's like something doesn't stop here and start here and stop. It's just a continuation. We don't see the continuation because it's interrupted by what we call death. But it's not a change, it's not a discontinuation of consciousness. We are always conscious. We're eternal. We always are conscious at some level. So, yes.
could be that the only way we can, one of the primary ways we can get to understand ourselves is to realize that we can't understand anything except through the other. Since we're all one, we need each other to bounce off of in order to actually to validate or to take a look at what we're feeling and to know what we want to do with it. We cannot not know what's going on. If I say, this is what I feel, and we put it forward, someone either would agree with it or not agree with it or tell it. We use words, and there lies the confusion. We feel uncomfortable. We're fear, we get back to the fear of being truly ourselves. We travel in the periphery. We say, this is what society expects me to do, so I can't say this. Okay, because if I say this, this will happen. Well, it really is just a matter of just calming ourselves down so that we can express who we really are and not be attached to any of it, one way or the other. Attached, that's the key, I think. We don't want to be attached to our own thinking. And be open, just be open to it all, and then you'll intuitively know how to move with it. It's hard work.
Really, well, that's why there's not a line out the door. You know, it's not the kind of work that anyone will say, hey, good job. No. No one will even know, let alone care. So, the Gita is our constant companion because it's constantly reminding us of how we should conduct ourselves, how we can afford a life more in harmony than what we presently own or have. The comprehensive ideas of the Gita are this, that we are all compelled to act. We will act whether we want to or not. So the Gita says, well, then act. But be single-minded. Be concentrated. Do it with all of your energy. But act as best seemeth unto you. But do not look for its rewards. Just do it because it has to be done. And give it up. Become unattached to one's labor. And give it up to humanity. Give it up to your neighbor. Do it because it needs to be done. And not look for the reward. The Gita is always a friendly reminder of how we can walk this path. And we always need that reminder. Because the path becomes dark and thorny from time to time. Yes?
When we were speaking earlier about making one's mind porous to the dictates of the soul, so is that when, are we saying then that intuitively we would have to realize that it is from the soul? I mean, do we actually, or is it like an aha moment when something finally gets through, or is it more of like a subtle kind of a prompting? Or is it both?
Yes. It is. It is both. But becoming porous to the dictates of the soul, you have to come to the realization that you are a soul. And you have to develop a relationship with that soul. Well, how do you develop a relationship with that which is? And always present. And beingness itself. Well, We do that through our attention. Our attention, we focus that divine energy. It's that simple. But if we color it with the qualities, which we do, because we live in the world of these qualities, we color it. So to live in the higher world, the higher life, and that we struggle with by drawing attention to these truths, that we're all from the same source. There is no God, but there is a deific principle that, let us simply call light. It is light. Yes?
Well, since World War II, many others have discovered the simplicity of the learning process that takes place on the parade ground. Tenderfoot doesn't know how to keep in step with the rest, doesn't listen well, so punishment, run me a half mile and don't stop. Well, pain teaches the soldier to get in step with the rest of his companions. And then on that day when they have a parade, the most beautiful thing to see is the harmonious tempo of a marching regiment. They are ready to do their duty for the country because they realize working together in harmony produces the best results. So what we have to learn is very simple, but difficult to carry out because of our selfish ideas. So here in these rooms, we get an idea of who we truly are. Not what we see in the mirror, but we have a duty to perform to straighten out these lower lives. That's progress.
The comment well taken is that this affords the opportunity to hear these ideas in the public in an open forum. It's a privilege that we have earned to hear these ideas again. And in so keeping, we can only disseminate these ideas by the way we live our life, by the words which we speak to our fellow man. That even though we do learn by pain, repetition is the great teacher. Do it again and again and again. And that's why every Wednesday night we're here. Every Sunday morning we're here. Some of us aren't the brightest bulb in the pack, but repetition, repetition, repetition. Because they're all very simple ideas. You don't have to be an Einstein to figure this out. We are gods. But don't tell anybody that in the street, because I'll lock you up. All right? In the back.
In the beginning of the class, said that personal development and individual perfectibility are one and the same thing. So So if we define the soul as the thinker, the mind, could we say that when the thinker is concentrated on this tool we use during life, the thoughts, the feelings, the senses, the personality, it engages in personal thought. But when the thinker is engaged in universal ideas, trying to understand the true self, the interconnectedness of all, the truths of nature, then it's engaged in individual perfectibility. So it's two paths. It seems like two paths, but it's really only one path of the soul where it places its attention.
Yeah, it's a continuation, because we are like a flower. We are rising up, and we will blossom one day into a full monastic being with all the powers that are resplendent within nature. We have all that in potential. But the reason why will is not discussed and why it isn't taught, because it said that even a good theosophist would become distracted by the powers that they would be able to control through the training of the will. You know, it is a spiritual power. It is not a mind power. It is a spiritual power, will. And it's colorless and odorless. Not good, not bad. It's a spiritual force. And through a trained mind, one can harness it. You know, and that's why in the schools of India and in Egypt, these were taught in the mysteries, in initiations. But it's independent effort, and the desire has to be refined to really understand why we are doing something. Is it tinged in any way with personal feelings, personal desires? Yeah, but that's part of the journey. The self-examination, the vigilance that one pays to one's own behavior and one's feelings and one's ideas, you pay attention. It becomes the chelas or the neophyte's journey is to self-examination. All the good, the bad, and the indifferent, but to see oneself in the light of truth.
When we were little boys misbehaving, Grandma would say, "What is the idea of that kind of, what are you doing, what's the idea?" We didn't pay any attention then, idea. Now we know ideas rule the world. So the thing is that here in these rooms we're provided with some very potent ideas. We have to choose whether we will follow that line or not. And generally, they make sense. And therefore, we'll always go back to remember some of the things those of what is the idea? And actually in school, the discipline of study produced a certain degree of harmony in our lives. So shouldn't we think about that? Why ideas rule the world?
Ideas are like the light that shines from without. Ideas rule the world, but it's light. light in the darkness. And that is what we have to remember. We're the light, and we're shining in the darkness. But do not let yourself be overcome by fear and doubt. Be brave. You live on forever in your higher self. Well, our time has come to an end. We would like to remind everyone that everything at this lodge is sustained through voluntary contributions. Not only the maintenance of the building, but what you see going on here today and this hour. We are all students that volunteer our time and our service to present these ideas as best we can, but not to say that these are absolute truths. You must become the discriminator. You must decide what is the truth. It's a self-realization. So in keeping with that, we give you the opportunity to participate with us. You can help with the lectures. You can help with the presentation of ideas. You can help in the conversations in the class. But there's always help that is needed and appreciated. Meeting adjourned. Hey, how are you?
Doing well.
All right.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just repeating it again and again and again. You know, you get inklings of it, and then the more you study, and they become stronger, and you know, hopefully it becomes a reality. But you know, it's tough in this world. You know, it's never nurtured, or you know, shown to you that you know there's more than what we're seeing here. And it's really, we're really getting ourselves into a mess if we don't start realizing what we are doing. But hey, who am I to complain, right?
Appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad I could be of help.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.